Chapter 30. Oromondo. The first time Sumroth had a man dismembered and burned, he almost vomited. His corps of protectors patrolled the obsidian mountains between Sixcaster and Sevencaster, watching for infiltrators and securing the camps where the miners pulled lead, zinc, gold and gems out of seams of rock. A shepherd from Alpatar, the country on their southern flank, had chased a wayward billy goat at least a league into Oromondo by the time Sumroth's patrol captured him.
"Sir,"
said the Ember, holding the man's arm,
"what should we do with this prisoner?"
"Please," the Alpi begged. "Please, I'll be more careful in the future. I meant no harm. He's one of my prized goats, and I didn't want to lose him. But if you let me go, I'll never cross the border again."
He looked from one captor to another and to Sumroth.
"I have a family. You can't blame me. You can't harm them, too."
The man, weaponless, with a slim build and the white-yellow hair that was common along the border of the two countries, obviously posed no threat. Yet Sumroth felt his soldiers regarding him, weighing his steadfastness and intestinal fortitude.
"We have a penalty for invaders," said Sumroth. "And to be a protector is to follow orders."
He motioned to his men. His men cut off the man's arms and then his legs. The terrified screams stopped after the arms, either from blood loss or shock. The crumpled figure lay on the ground. Sumroth himself severed the head with his greatsword. They built a fire around the bloody chunks, though they had difficulty getting it to catch. The smell of burning flesh clogged his nose and raised his bile, so Sumroth had to stride in the direction of fresher air. But he noticed that his men's salutes became crisper, and they jumped faster when he gave an order. They feared him now, in a way they hadn't before. Sumroth found it a horror to kill citizens. In his heart, he knew the Magi were paranoid and dangerous, but to protect himself, he tried to grow a callus over his conscience. When his corps rode through a village, if the cattle breeders told him that their cattle sickened, he dismembered the local animal tender. If a teacher was denounced for questioning the Magi, Sumroth hid his disgust at the town folk's bloodlust. He had made his choices. Now he had to see them through. His men followed his lead without demur.
"Duty! Strength! The Eight! The power of the Eight! Long will their flames burn and conquer! Duty! Strength! The Eight! The power of the Eight! Long will their flames burn and conquer!"
He joined the chants loudly. The louder he chanted, the more he could partition to the side any internal doubts. But after he had proven his brutality and obedience to the Magi, he found that he had room to make exceptions. One town, in a valley below a mine, had suffered a rash of plagues. The people's fears eventually clustered on a widow woman for no discernible reason, other than because she and her children had remained healthy.
"She must be a witch, a traitor to the land," shouted a group of frenzied villagers one day as they dragged the trussed woman in front of him in the town square that held the village well.
"Cistern, how do you explain that your neighbours sicken but you and yours do not?"
Sumroth asked in front of the hushed mob.
"Protector, sir, I hardly know. I pray nightly to the Eight, but so do my pious neighbours. Our farm sits a little away from the village, on the rise over that way. Could it be that the vision of Fire Mountain in the distance sends a blessed aura?"
"Kill a witch!" shouted someone from the crowd. "My cows have all died!" yelled someone else.
The woman looked up at him pleadingly.
I have 3 healthy children dependent upon my care.
Samroth made a decision.
Citizens, in your fear, you have chosen the wrong target, he called out. This woman is innocent of any wrongdoing. You will leave her and her family in peace, or you will pay the penalty.
The woman fell to her knees and tried to kiss his hand. He put his hand on her head briefly, feeling the self-satisfaction of mercy. He had his men cut her bonds and escort her home, and he told the mayor in graphic terms what would happen to her if the woman met with harm. The reaction of his men interested Samroth more than the sensibilities of the hamlet. He had made no friendships or bonds among his underlings because he continually worried a friend would sniff out his hidden disability. His inability to distinguish faces and tell people apart. So he made it a practice in his commands always to refer to his soldiers by rank. Ember, first flamer, second flamer, and so on, not because he inherently craved formality, but because he was able to count tattoos. Since he felt isolated from his men, he was continually preoccupied by any indications about morale. The night he pardoned the young mother, when he entered the officers' meal tent to partake of their frugal rations, the men stood as usual, and then they broke into sustained cheering and applause. His men had grown accustomed to fear. What they yearned for most was clemency. Samroth wondered if some of the other soldiers harboured secret doubts about these executions. But of course it was impossible for him to probe their feelings. A messenger from Femturin caught up to his company outside the village. Samroth opened the dispatch anxiously, fearing that somehow his superiors had already heard of his using his discretion and pardoning the woman. But the message relayed that his company had been given the honour of escorting 4 magi on a visit to Pexlia. Of course they would go overland. An ocean voyage might have been quicker, but even setting aside the unnavigability of Femturin Harbour, the Magi never put themselves in the care of Lotan, spirit of the sea. Samroth's orders instructed him to rendezvous at the pass near Sevencaster. The message did not tell him why the Magi were leaving the land, and it was not his place to ask. His task was to lead the caravan safely south through the trade corridor, crossing Alpatar to Pexlia and back again. The messenger also brought news that the Octagon had promoted Samroth another level. He sent the messenger back to Femturin with a long letter for his wife and turned toward the garrison town. The caravan of 4 magi in palanquins, plus numerous servants and supplies, appeared after a wait of 6 days.
4 magi entrusted to my care. They wore tabards of golden silk with their numbers encrusted with jewels.
They each travelled in a black palanquin, carried by porters who were fed triple rations. Because horses had proven particularly sensitive to the blights that affected the land, Samroth personally surveyed all the horses in the caravan. He didn't want the trip to get bogged down because of sick animals. Each morning of the journey started with a magi leading the entire caravan in prayer. Eyes glowing red with ardour, Magi 3 spoke with particular fervour. He usually led the worship, though sometimes 4, 7, or 8 ascended the travelling podium. The prayers inspired devotion. Samroth's soul burned in their warmth, and he made damn sure that his soldiers cheered their throats hoarse and slammed their fists red. The trade corridor, created as part of the settlement of the War of the Priests, stretched 2 leagues wide. It led through Alpatar to the port city Extolpus and Pexlia, which Oromondo now used as its primary nexus for trade. As they travelled, they glimpsed no Alpies. Those weak herders kept their distance from Samroth's soldiers. The sun shone bright, but not too hot. The Alpatar foothills resembled the foothills on the Oromondian side, rocky and steep. But once the caravan reached lower, flatter terrain, Somroth inspected his surroundings with interest. The land rolled into the distance, a lush green. The trees and foliage looked healthier. In the distance, he could see fields of crops and hear the lowing of cattle. Somroth envied the fecund surroundings.
Someday soon we will take this bounty to feed our hungry people.
A runner summoned Somroth to the palanquin of Magi 8. Like all of the Magi, her black palanquin glittered with gems. When he took off his helmet and bowed his head, she pushed aside the red curtains to converse.
Your divinity, you sent for me?
She sat in the dark shadow of the conveyance. All Somroth could see were her eyes, a hint of red. Feathers of fear ran up and down his spine, but he forced himself to hide his trepidation.
I did. We need to arrive at Ixtopus in 2 moons. Are we travelling quickly enough?
In that case, we need to pick up the pace and spend fewer morning hours in prayer.
Somroth cursed himself for the last sentence, which he had blurted out without thinking. It might be his death sentence. But this morning the group had prayed for nearly 2 hours before breaking camp, hours that could have been used to cover ground.
I will see to it,
was all Eight replied.
And I will see to the pace, your divinity.
Firestarter, if our mission succeeds, you will be raised to the rank of Firestormer. You will be given 6 flames.
I am not worthy of such a distinction.
We'll see,
replied the Magi.
What I would like most, Somroth heard himself say, is extra time with my wife.
We'll see,
said the Magi again. Somroth pulled his whip out and lashed her porters.
Double time.